fluctuation of background radiation, but then actually I assert that probably for string auditorium all this kind of boring hydrodynamics is not so interesting. It was one of the reasons. And there was the other reason why I decided to change actually the talk, because 2 months ago there was some conference on string and cosmology in Sweden, and Lyman Page actually, I think experimentalists very rare, ask theorists some kind of questions what they have to do next. But it was the case. He asked actually theorists what is more important, to verify how close is omega to 1 or to find the deviation of spectral index from n equal 1. And I was amazed that I was only one in auditorium who voted for n equal, for the deviation of n equal 1. Fortunately, experimentalists actually do not take very literally and very seriously everything what theorists tell them. So, why I think actually, now I will try to explain why actually to find deviation from n equal 1 is much more important. And actually, analogy is very simple. If you would have $200 million, okay, and would need to decide to how to spend these dollars, to look for CP violation or to put new bound on CPT invariance, then I think actually the answer would be definite. So in this case, actually omega is close to 1, is the same as CPT invariance. And there is no reason to expect that omega is not equal 1, but there are quite a lot of reasons to expect that n deviates from n equal 1, and this is why I think actually it's quite too important to find this thing. So, my talk will consist of two parts. So, there will be actually quantum input in this CMB slow code, and also at the end I will talk about classical outcome of calculations and dependence of the curves on the parameters. So, Gabriel asked me actually to start with some provocative statement, but I think this statement is not provocative, that main bonus from inflation is generation of primordial spectrum of inhomogeneities. Yeah, we know there is actually a very good property of the inflation, that inflation wash out all pre-inflationary inhomogeneities. This statement is known as no-hair theorem, okay, for inflation. But this means that inflation has no classical hairs. It doesn't mean that inflation actually doesn't have quantum hairs, because there are always quantum hairs, which actually are due to the Heisenberg uncertainty relation, which grows during inflation. And of course, actually, they are originally small. Typical number for this metric fluctuation, for instance, in Minkowski space, in galactic scale. I made this estimate just for gravitons, but you understand that actually for the perturbation which we need, okay, there will be approximately the same estimate. So it's, okay, amplitude of typical metric fluctuation is inversely proportional to the scale, and the only typical scale which can enter here is the Plankin scale. Therefore, if today we would took this fluctuation in galactic scale, then we would get typical metric fluctuation 10⁻⁸. And to explain the galaxies, what we need actually the amplitude 10⁻⁵. So the question is, under which conditions we could actually amplify this very small amplitude, okay, by 50 orders of magnitude. And to answer this question, okay, let's consider the most generic theory which we could write at all. The most generic theory, of course, includes Einstein gravity, everything is in Plankian unit, and some action or Lagrangian for the matter. Now, I wrote the Lagrangian as some function of some scalar variables and also these x variables, which is nothing more than just actually this standard kinetic term for scalar field. But you shouldn't take this Lagrangian as a Lagrangian which describes only scalar field. Because if I will consider some non-trivial function which depends only on x, okay, and doesn't depend on phi, then this Lagrangian imitates hydrodynamical liquid. So with any equation of state. If I will take high derivative gravity, I can also actually rewrite, making conformal transformation, this thing actually in such a form. Therefore, this is the most generic things which can be there. And in the case of hydrodynamics, for instance, phi plays the role of the velocity potential. Now, of course, okay, this thing can depend on many other things, but I believe that, okay, theory should be the simplest one, and initial condition, the most generic, not vice versa. In spite of the fact that probably there are many people who believe that there should be generic theory. Okay, to get generic theory, you, by the way, can ask computer to generate some arbitrary Lagrangian, and then you will get it, okay, very easily. And then using anthropic principle, you probably will find solution which will satisfy everybody. But I think it's not our actual purpose to do this job. So energy momentum tensor for this Lagrangian, okay, can be written down in the form which again imitates hydrodynamical fluid, where energy density can be written down, can be expressed in terms of derivative of P and this kinetic energy. Now, of course, if this first term is much smaller than the second term, we have equation of state like this one, and we have inflation. How can we realize this condition for long enough time? Okay, in two possible ways. Either we can have very small speed of slow roll, okay, so x very small, or we can have, okay, non-trivial dependence of the Lagrangian on the kinetic energy and can have very small derivative here. In the first case, we are getting standard inflation. In the second case, when actually inflation is based on the small derivative of the Lagrangian with respect to kinetic energy, we are getting so-called K-inflation. So there are two possibilities in this sense. Now, we could ask the question, when we describe the perturbation, okay, under which condition I could amplify these perturbations? Okay, and let's find this condition. For that, we have to consider, for instance, okay, some perturbation in the matter now. And, of course, the matter perturbation here will induce perturbation in the metric. Namely, perturbation in the matter are responsible for this longitudinal perturbation, which are characterized by Newtonian potential, and there is the part of the metric, okay, which corresponds to the gravity wave, and which is not related to the matter perturbations. So it's the most generic thing. Now we just take Einstein equation and write a couple of simple equations. For the gravity wave, in the expanded universe, it's very straightforward to write this equation, and it's convenient. Instead of transverse traceless component of the metric, okay, introduce this U, rescaled variable, and constant polarization tensor. Then this U satisfies equation, okay, like this one, which is nothing more than equation, okay, for harmonic oscillator with time-dependent frequency. And it's clear that all influence of the expansion of the universe is here. If you would forget about this term, which is of the order of curvature, then everything looks like in Minkowski space. Now, the job for the scalar perturbation is a little bit more complicated because you understand that these two variables are not independent, in fact. They actually are related by constraint. And what we can do, we can take actually Einstein action, expand up to the second order in terms of the perturbations, then make some kind of calculation, then what we will find? We will find that in the case of scalar perturbations, if you would have no gravitational field, or how it's called, gravitational field, then you would just quantize scalar field itself. But since if you will, there is actually back reaction of the gravity field on the evolution of scalar field, the real quantization variable is this combination of the metric perturbation, scalar metric perturbation, plus scalar field. You see, and you can show that actually it's canonical variable for quantization. Now, again, it's actually convenient to determine this new variable, okay, which is rescaled, and this new variable, V, is satisfies the equation which is very similar to the equation for the gravity wave with two exceptions. First exception, there come instead of the scale factor here, the following combination, Z, okay, which is scale factor and this correction factor. Since the universe where P over epsilon is constant, there is no difference between this equation. Also, there comes what is so-called effective speed of sound here, which is determined like this one, like particular partial derivative of pressure to energy density. If you will take scalar field with canonical energy, dependence from the kinetic energy, then you will get here always one. And let me consider first this case. Now, okay, how to quantize this theory? You know, so we will put hats everywhere, put commutation relation as the whole problem is solution of the equation. Here, solution of the classical equations, you see you can always find in two limiting cases. For instance, when you forget about this term, then it's just plain wave. Or when you forget about this term, then simplest solution is U proportional to R or H equal constant here. As you see, here it's the same story actually, but here when you forget about this term, then delta phi plus this combination will be not constant but proportional to 1 plus p over epsilon. So, okay, now the scale actually which determines one behavior or the other behavior is the second derivative, which can be estimated just as the scale of Kovich, and it's clear why it should be the case, because if we have, we are within the scales which are smaller than the scale of Kovich, you can forget about gravity field, you can always go to the local inertial frame and everything like in Minkowski's way. On the scale bigger than the Kovich scale, gravity is efficient. So, quantum mechanical fluctuations are big enough only how it's called in those scales which are close to the Planckian scale, so our purpose will be transfer these fluctuations, stretching them to big galactic scale. But of course, when we are stretching these fluctuations, then they shouldn't lose in their amplitude. And let's see actually under which condition it can happen. Let's consider plane wave perturbation. So when universe expands, then of course wavelength is growing proportionally to the scale factor. And the dependence on the amplitude for this perturbation depends how big is this wavelength compared to the scale of curvature, for dimensional curvature. Now, if I will consider perturbation with wavelength much smaller than the scale of curvature, so-called smaller than the size of Einstein elevator, then here I can always introduce coordinate system where everything like in Minkowski space, okay, this scalar field doesn't feel anything, and I can forget about this second term in the equations, okay, when I stretch the perturbation, it just loses amplitude. It goes 1 divided by scale factor. It's the description of Minkowski vacuum just in expanding coordinate system, nothing more. Now, and gravity field here doesn't work. Now, when the wavelength is bigger than the scale of curvature, then I could say that okay, gravitational field of the universe can work and can keep amplitude to be constant. And actually, this case corresponds to the case when we can forget about the gradient terms for big perturbations. In this case, as we have seen in two equations, okay, the amplitude of the gravity wave stays just constant, but the amplitude of this canonical variable for quantization, nevertheless, okay, can be changed or is changing because it's proportional to 1 plus pressure divided by energy density. As we know, for pure cosmological terms, this is 0. But you understand that actually, if we have pure de Sitter, then there is no point to consider inflation or cosmological perturbation because actually, pure cosmological term is as useless as no cosmological term at all for inflation. Therefore, here everything is determined by this combination. Now, knowing these two facts, we can calculate everything, including the spectra, in 1 minute. First of all, okay, let's consider here scale factor. Okay, we start at initial moment of time. Then, in small scales, perturbations are big. When I go to big scales at this moment of time, then the amplitude goes down inversely proportional to the scale. And in galactic scale, if here it's 10 minus 5, then in galactic scale it's 10 minus 58. Now, universe expands, so the wavelength grows. What happens with perturbation? Here its amplitude is big. To understand what happens with perturbation, we have to look how the scale of curvature is changing during this expansion. If I will take no inflationary case, so A dot is decreasing, then it's clear that the square of curvature is increasing faster than the size of perturbation grows. So if perturbation was in this local inertial frame, then it always stays there, doesn't feel anything, okay? And we are like in Minkowski space, so when we come to big scales, everything disappeared. So we start here with 10 minus 5, came here 10 minus 58. So no inflation, no chance to get fluctuations in galactic scale. At least, okay, in the universe in which we live, not in contracting universe. Okay, now, if there is inflation, then the scale of curvature, you understand that it's accelerated expansion, grows not as fast as the scale factor, or stays constant approximately. So we start somewhere here. Okay, perturbation at the beginning, amplitude drops till the moment of time when its size starts to increase the scale of curvature. And after that, okay, it remains practically constant. And you can stretch it with the same amplitude to galactic scale, and amplitude here will be the same as here on the offset from this Einstein elevator. Now, okay, let's see how the spectra should look like. So we start with normal Minkowski vacuum. You see, within Einstein, within local inertial frame here. So here the amplitudes are inversely proportional to the physical scale. Let's take two wavelengths, this one and this one. This one is already on offset from the spectra. Now, okay, if this scale stays constant, like during inflation, when this perturbation left the horizon, then what will happen with it? Okay, it's stretched. If this, how it's called, cross corresponds to the scale of perturbation, and this thing to the gravity wave, I mean circle, then circle has the same amplitude because it's constant. But you see, the amplitude of the scale of perturbation is growing proportional to 1 plus square to 1 plus p over epsilon. So deviation of equation of state from p equal minus epsilon grow when you go to the end of the inflation. Therefore, the IP is this difference. What happens with this perturbation? Okay, it just stretched, lost amplitude, so this spectra here stays invariant. Of course, if we do formal calculation, then instead of this perturbation, some perturbation comes from sub-Planckian scale. Therefore, people actually invented problem which is called trans-Planckian scale. But this is not the problem of physics, this is the problem of our method of analyzing these things. Because you understand that any fluctuation which we have here, okay, should be there because of the uncertainty relation. Only in our calculation scheme, okay, which we used, it looks like it came from trans-Planckian scales. But in fact, actually, you shouldn't even think about it. So it's actually defect of our calculation. Now, but what happens after that? So these perturbations come on offset, yeah? So it wants to leave the scale of curvature. But we shouldn't forget that during inflation, if there is deviation of equation of state from p equal minus epsilon, energy density also goes down. So this scale of curvature also grows a little bit. Therefore, okay, the perturbation, red perturbation leaves actually this curvature scale a little bit later when already the scale of curvature has grown, and therefore its amplitude is a bit smaller. And then after that, okay, red point keeps constant amplitude, but red cross, okay, grows proportional to 1 over square root of p plus epsilon. So you see, okay, wait a little bit, everything is stretched. There appears also difference between gravity waves and scalar perturbations. And also you see that because epsilon is changing during inflation, here these two points are not at the same level. So there is even tilt for the gravity wave. But here for the scalar perturbation, for tilt, there are two reasons: change of epsilon and change of the deviation equation of equation of state from p equal minus 1, because inflation is over when 1 plus P over epsilon is of the order of 1, yeah? Now, okay, we are getting these two spectra, and then when we do formal calculations, then everything what we will get, that the amplitude in the scalar sector, okay, there is some numerical coefficient here, squared is proportional to the ratio of the energy density during inflation to the Planckian energy density, and divided by this combination. For the scalar perturbation, for the gravity wave, okay, there is no this factor, therefore, there is no, okay, this coefficient on the offset of the things. Now, if I would calculate tilt in the, if I would consider now K inflationary case, then here there appears extra speed of sound. And speed of sound actually for K inflation should be always smaller than 1, because it's one of the condition for realizing of K inflation. Therefore, what we fix in experiment right now, when we do not know still gravity wave, only this combination. So energy density plus deviation of equation of state at the moment when perturbation which we observe actually left the horizon. How useful is it for fundamental theory? I do not know, actually, because there are hundreds of ways, okay, to make this combination right, as you understand. But nevertheless, it doesn't mean that we didn't learn anything. We learned something about change of the effective equation of state, and we learned something about universe. Now, if I will calculate spectral index, then there will be always actually two contributions here for deviation of this spectral index from 1. Okay, one contribution is related with change of epsilon during inflation, and the other with this extra factor. Now, it's clear that in the most natural inflation, first of all, epsilon always just goes down. But second thing actually, that since we are interested in last 60 fold during inflation, then it's hard to imagine that there can be crazy behavior of 1 plus P over epsilon. In fact, if you want to finish inflation, then 1 plus P over epsilon should increase. Closer to the end, bigger is this value. Therefore, both contributions here, okay, are negative, and in the most natural case, okay, we are getting spectral something like 0.96, 95, etc. Here you still can play, but not very much. Now, what about gravity wave? Generically, if you would use these formulas, then you see that they are suppressed by this factor. But nevertheless, this factor is 1 over 60. Square root of 1 over 60 is not so little. And then gravity wave, because of numerical factors, actually can contribute more to the perturbation of the CMB. So the question is, should we really, in the simplest model of inflation, expect high level of the gravity wave? Yes, if inflation, generic inflation, is due to the potential term. In this case, okay, you can get rough estimate from here. But even in simplest inflation, you can avoid also gravity wave very easily if you would consider K inflation, because there appears extra suppression factor here. So I do not know, will we be able in 10 years actually is a good estimate, optimistic estimate, to see this gravitational wave actually in B component of polarization or not. But if you forget about gravity waves, then the only thing, as you have seen, which we could measure, okay, in fluctuations, is this kind of combination of energy density plus equation of state. Now, okay, this is the spectrum which we generated after inflation. So 25, okay, it's good. So second, 15 more, yeah? Okay, good. So, you see, after it came like this one, after inflation, it stays practically unchanged until the moment when the scales, okay, which are very big, re-enter horizon again. Because when the scales are much bigger than the curvature scales and they are frozen, when they re-enter horizon, then, for instance, they can become sound waves. The moment in which we are interested in is the moment of recombination when radiation decouples from matter. At this moment, okay, there is some typical scale which corresponds to the horizon scale, and we know that in the scales bigger than this typical scale, spectra is practically unchanged. But in the scale smaller than the horizon scale, when perturbation entered horizon, they start to behave like sound waves, and therefore the spectra is deformed. So, what we have to do, we have actually to calculate this transfer function. How people usually do this thing? Okay, they write numerical codes, okay, put six parameters, in 3 minutes you get curve for the resulting CMB fluctuations, and this code is called CMB fast. You know that Steve Weinberg actually some time ago made the attempt to rederive the things, because it's six parameters problem. Actually, there can be some regions there of degeneracy of parameters. Therefore, it would be not bad to have at least some theoretical control. Okay, so Steve Weinberg went some steps, but not till then, because actually finally he put integrals on computer also, and in one place for transfer function, actually he missed one important thing, dependence on the matter. I will show you where it is. And I have actually spent on this thing few months, and therefore I call that this is CMB slow. It's not 3 minutes. So finally, actually, what can you use? When you do analytical calculation, you could use WKB approximation. Using WKB approximation for all this hydrodynamics, etc., you are getting for this combination, so fluctuation and radiation and gravitational potential at the moment of recombination, this, okay, not very horrible expression, as you see, where you see there appears the dependence on the parameters actually of cosmological model. Also, this thing can be obtained in WKB approximation only for wavelengths which entered horizon before equipartition, much before equipartition, or much later, after equipartition. Actually, the region of three peaks is exactly in between these two asymptotic regimes. And therefore, okay, this coefficient Tp and To, which can be calculated analytically into asymptotics, cannot be calculated in this intermediate regime, asymptotic, how it's called, analytically. Therefore, I use some little numerics, but very simple for this coefficient. You will see. So here, okay, everything is explained, so let me go here a little bit faster. This was initial spectrum, this is transfer function, exponent which appears here, okay, and which dumps the perturbation is related with viscosity in the universe, and the so-called silk dumping scale. It's the scale on which the photon can propagate during the cosmological time, actually making this random work. Now, cosine, which comes here, appears because we have sound wave. After perturbation entered horizon, okay, what we have? We have, first of all, cold matter, which is perturbed and which interacts with the rest of the matter only gravitationally. And we have also coupled gas of baryons and radiation. And the speed of sound in this gas depends, of course, on the amount of baryons. And there appears also the piece, okay, which is constant piece and which is due to the cold matter, which mostly contributes to the gravitational potential. So, and then you see that here appears all the dependencies on all the parameters. The strongest dependence on omega baryons comes from here, because you are getting this coefficient to be proportional to baryon energy, baryon density. Then, okay, where comes, and also baryon comes here in the speed of propagation. Now, where appears dependence on the cold matter in this coefficient? As I said already, because you see, if you would make computer calculation for this coefficient, the most here I can find it analytically, here I can find it analytically, but in this region I can find it only numerically for this limiting case and then approximate it. But this place actually depends on omega matter h squared. And this is where the main dependence on omega matter comes. Because Weinberg actually missed this dependence, and after that he made few conclusions which were not completely correct. Also, similar thing we have also for this coefficient, which is amplitude for the sound wave. Now, what we do? Okay, now we take this thing and substitute in the standard formulas, which I'm not going to derive. And, okay, first of all, we can consider the case when angles are very big, where spectra is not transformed, and it corresponds to the multiple moments smaller than 100. So this is the horizon scale. In this case, nothing changed after recombination. Okay, so the spectra which was generated on inflation is like this one, and the amplitude of the fluctuation is radiation, also can be expressed through the gravitational potential. Then we can write that delta T over T in some direction today n, okay, is equal to 1/3 of gravitational potential in the place from the, where this light came. Therefore, okay, after that, we can do simple calculation, write correlation function, okay, rewrite it in terms of the multiples, and then for the multiples, okay, in this case, for big L, we are getting standard result, okay, that is constant. For the multiples smaller than 30, if there is no big deviation from the scale invariance. Now, the situation in the case when angle scales are small is much more interesting and much more complicated. And in this case, actually, the integral which we have to calculate, okay, is like this one for multiples, where we have to substitute this horrible expression which I showed here, and here as a spherical Bessel function. So integral is not manageable, and even for computer you have to write special program, because actually computer works not so friendly with these spherical Bessel functions. But here, nevertheless, I can use the other advantage. I can use the advantage of small angle scale or big multiples, and then there is some kind of approximation, which, by the way, actually Weinberg probably did first. This integral can be reduced to the integrals, okay, with square roots, nothing more. After that, I take this horrible expression, substitute here. Then I am getting a lot of integrals with sine and cosines, which I can actually estimate. But this is a separate story, okay, for the school children. But nevertheless, actually, you know that sometimes to calculate integrals is not so easy. So some integrals here can be calculated using stationary point approximation with sine and cosine. The other integral actually can be expressed through hypergeometric functions, but also hypergeometric functions are not transparent, therefore actually I can use some kind of numerical fit for it, and I will give you the result. After I did this horrible job, I am getting actually for the spectra the following result. That the ratio of the amplitude in small l, okay, to the constant amplitude at big L, small l, can be presented as a sum of two factors. One factor is oscillating factor, and the other factor is not oscillating, because if you remember, in delta over 4 plus 5, there was constant factor. Now, what does it mean, this non-oscillating factor? Okay, so some calculation give you this result, but of course, it's not very informative. Nevertheless, you can see here the dependence on the parameters. If I would draw, okay, this curve here, it's like hill. Here, hill goes down because actually I have this silk dissipation scale, roughly speaking. There is more tricky thing. Now, the height of this hill also depends on cosmological parameters. You see from here, if you will increase omega baryon, then what happens? Then the top hill goes up. If you will increase omega m, then the hill will go down. So there is degeneracy for this hill, as you see already, but the hill is not the only contribution. And as you have seen, the spectrum is not like this one. Here there is the other term, okay, which is oscillating term. And this term, you are getting squaring constant plus cosine. It's clear that you are getting cosine of some doubled argument as a result, and cosine with a single frequency here. The coefficient here depends also on cosmological parameters, and in particular, the strongest dependence comes here, because here coefficient will be proportional to the omega baryon. Here, there is also dependence on omega m, but it's only logarithmic in the second coefficient, okay, there is only dependence on omega m. Now, if I will take these two cosines, by the way, they have also different phases, a little bit shift in the phases, also rho here depends also on the other cosmological parameter. You see, so it's complete mess. This is the only my purpose to show that actually the mess is really very high there. So, okay. Then, when you will draw these two curves, then you will see actually, then this is superposition of two sine. And you have constructive interference in the region of first, third peak, fifth peak, etc. And you have destructive interference in the region of second peak, fourth peak, etc. So, if you will sum these two cosine, then you are getting the curve like this one. Take this curve, if sometimes even there is no this second peak here. Superimpose on this hill, and you are getting nice picture, which you have seen. You see, and by the way, this picture I got with this analytical formula, but not with CMBFA, so I'm not cheating. You understand, accuracy here is 10%, but I think, okay, for analytical stuff, it's more than enough for broad range, actually, for six parametric problem, okay, it's good. For the people, by the way, actually, when Weinberg sent his paper to his ref, okay, he got from referee question, okay, how your analytical calculation can compete with numerical codes. Okay, so what can I say? So this talk is not for this referee, for sure. Now, determining the cosmological parameters. Zero, Hubble constant, as you know, omega meta, omega baryon, omega total, okay, which includes also cosmological constant, then amplitude of the spectrum and spectral index. Now, how this information can be extracted from this curve? For that, we have to see how this curve actually, which we got, depends on the different parameters. Let's start with the simplest case when we change omega total, but forget about cosmological constant. In such a case, okay, if there is no cosmological constant, first peak moves on the right if omega goes down. So it seems that the location of the peak could be a good indicator for the total energy density. But the things are not so simple because you have seen that rho, etc. depends also on the other cosmological parameters. So let's ask the question, okay, could how the location of the peak depends, for instance, on omega baryon, if we will take omega total equal 1. And then you can easily see that when you will increase compared to concordance model the baryon density by factor 2, then you can move peak on the right by 40, quite a lot. Also, you can see from this formula for the peak location that if you will increase twice meta density, then the peak will go, okay, on the on the left, links, left, yeah, 40. If you would increase this thing twice and this thing decrease twice, then you can move peak easily from 200 to 300. So, and now you could ask the question, why nevertheless I tell you that location of the first peak is good indication for omega total. And in fact, if the height of the peak would not be fixed, then it would be not indication at all for the omega total. But you shouldn't forget that if I will consider the height of the first peak, then if I want to be it fixed, since omega baryon and omega meta act in the different directions, the increase of these two parameters, yeah, if I want to fix this height, then I should either increase both baryon density and meta density or decrease them. And you remember that when I am doing this thing, then meta, for instance, moves peak on the right and baryon on the left. So in this case, varying these two parameters, but keeping the height of the peak to be fixed, okay, I make the location of the first Doppler peak practically independent on the other parameters. And this is the reason why it's a good indicator for omega total. Now, okay, I will, 2 minutes. Now, what happens with the second peak? You see, if on the first peak, this omega m and omega baryon act in opposite direction, then on the second peak, they act in the same direction. Increase of both of them try to kill this second peak. And from here, immediately follows the second peak exists, for instance, practically respectively of omega m, if omega baryon is smaller than 7%. It's for sure. independency. Now, also, if I would increase given baryon density more than 3%, more than we see in experiment, if I won't increase omega meta too much, then I would kill also second peak. So from the existence of second peak, quite robustly, and its location of the first peak, which tells us that omega total is equal to 1, follows very robustly that, okay, 70% should be in cosmological constant. And I think actually it's more clean indication on the presence of cosmological constant than even astrophysical observation of very far away, okay, this big redshift supernova. You see, and I think it's actually a really great result. I think I bought to Alex, with whom I lost the bottle of cosmological constant, after this result or before? Before, probably. I lost, yeah. So, what third peak can tell us? Okay, so from the location of the first peak and second peak, we can fix these two parameters, but then third peak can allow us actually to determine spectral index. And what people actually promise is really impressive. Yeah, okay. Now, the question is, with which accuracy also you can determine Hubble constant? Because as you have seen, in most of the places, Hubble constant comes together with omega in combination omega h squared. And there is only one place where this degeneracy actually can be resolved, because peak location depends on this combination, omega m h squared, and peak height depends on omega m h 3.2, but a small power. Nevertheless, actually, because the power here is small, the accuracy of determination actually of this Hubble constant from the CMP data is the worst one, because 1% actually in the location of peaks corresponds to approximately 7% in the Hubble constant. So this is the situation actually, how it looks like, and this graph you have seen many times, but of course it's in all the papers, but okay, I didn't want to present it, but you see, actually, when you read MAP papers, and people usually tell that you have to read all our papers, because actually we have this result there and the other result, because some people quote from MAP as a main result that spectral index is n equal 1.2 plus minus running, okay? And after that, I asked people from MAP what happened. They told they are not responsible for that, because in fact, actually, what follows from MAP itself, perfect agreement with the simplest inflation, okay, and no problem with it. When people start to combine this clean physical result with astrophysical, much more dirty stuff, then there is running spectral index, okay, which run 1 month in one direction, the other month in the other direction. You see, and all kind of troubles. But nevertheless, in one of the papers, I think, which they wrote and which all series read, I mean, about inflation interpretations, they put as a main result n equal 1.2 plus minus running in the abstract and nothing else. This is the reason why usually actually I quote this thing, because it's real results, but not all kind of mixture. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So you began by contrasting the search for measuring W, the equation of state parameter, and M, the spectral index.
Yeah.
And Andre has already asked, if we measure that W is not equal to minus 1, has that ruled out string theory?
No, but this is different W, actually. This is quintessence, which you mean.
That's
today's
right.
Oh, W, yeah, right.
So today's W, right. But
yeah.
He was pointing out that there's a possibility for ruling out a theory there. So in fairness, we should ask, if we measure that N, the spectral index, is equal to 1, let's say plus or minus 10 to the minus 3, would that rule out inflation?
No, 10 minus 3, 1, 10 minus 3, it will rule out inflation, which I like. But as you know, okay, you can always take good things, spoil it with a lot of parameters, and actually there is no problem to fit couple of curves. You see, in 100 different ways.
Just Slava did not mention in the beginning of his talk that his talk is mainly about the simplest models of inflation with one field. And now string theory sometimes have a different perspective of what is simplest. because from my perspective, the simplest inflation would be m squared y squared, period. You don't need anything, you already have inflation. It's just the theory of harmonic oscillator. But string theorists have, for example, two colliding brains, and these colliding brains melts, then you have tachyon condensate, and then they call it the simplest and working or possible working model of inflation. Okay. So in this case, this is a hybrid inflation type model with two fields, and in the models like that, n can easily be larger than 1.
Right, equal to 1 is really very bad, as you have seen, it's very bad.
If the, not accidentally, if the energy scale in this model can be very small, which is preferable if you want to, suppress the contribution of cosmic strings to the spectrum, which is what you want to do, okay, then in this case you exactly arrive at n equal 1.
Yeah, I just wanted to know what limits can be currently placed on the gravitational wave amplitude, and how close are these limits?
Right now?
Right now.
No, it's actually very far away from what we expect. So right now, actually, the only place where you can put limit on the amplitude of the gravity wave actually is these low multiples, because they also contribute there. The contribution of the gravity wave goes down when L bigger than 100. But nevertheless, you understand that this is first of all the region where actually cosmic variance is very big, and there is second thing, actually you still can play actually with spectral index. So right now you can actually rule out nothing. And I also do not actually expect that just measuring the spectra, you can reveal very clearly, okay, contribution of the gravity waves there. To measure gravity wave, we really need measurement of B component of polarization. And actually, people measured already E component. The accuracy will be tremendously good within few years. But for B component, perspectives are not hopeless, okay? They are not very good. So actually, people did, I think, half a billion startup money to start to think about these experiments. And in the best, okay, we will get first result probably 2015, something like this one, if, of course, okay, they will get money.
Slava, it's a question about theory of cosmological perturbations. You have formula for the amplitude of metric scalar fluctuations. And we know that without a slow roll, if we have a pure de-Sitter, there is no metric fluctuations.
Yeah.
On the other hand, your formula is inversely proportional from deviation from the pure de-Sitter.
Yeah.
It's kind of a paradoxical situation.
No.
The closer we are going to pure de-Sitter, the higher the amplitude of fluctuation.
No, Lyuba. It's not amplitude of perturbation on de-Sitter. It's a amplitude of perturbation after de-Sitter is over. Because actually, to get this formula, I took the ratio for 1 plus P over epsilon, 1 divided by this ratio at the moment of horizon crossing. Now, if you are very close actually to W minus 1, then I'm sorry, you will be always living in this nice world without these perturbations. You understand? Because in de-Sitter there is no perturbations. If you would calculate actually the amplitude of perturbation during de-Sitter, then you will see that there is no metric.
What happens in the limit if I go to very, very small value?
If you will take actually limit for the final perturbation after the end of inflation, you will get infinity. But you know that in this limit you will never end inflation. Now, if you will calculate perturbation on de-Sitter and will take limit, okay, W goes to minus 1, you will get 0. So everything is fine.
Maybe I can comment on this point. Yeah. What if you want the amplitude of fluctuations on observable scales, you have to calculate a fixed number of e-foldings from the end of inflation.
Yeah.
And you find that the flatter the potential is when inflation starts, the steeper it is when the fluctuations exit the Hubble radius, the fluctuations that we observe today.
Yeah.
So in this way, you can see that there is no paradox.